Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to another edition of Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian. My co-host today, like last week, Brian Johnson, GuillotineLeagues.com, and Matt Harrison, Shock Fantasy.
Yeah,
bzzz. Where do you shock? Where do you deliver the shocks? And at what voltage? That's what I want to know.
I'll get my mind out of the gutter. Don't worry.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Lots of great stuff. You know, speaking of the gutter, lots of great stuff coming up in the show. From the gutter, like the stink hole.
Oh, no.
The stink hole.
This is the gutter show.
This is the gutter show. It really is. We're going to get there and stay there.
Might be one place where the shocker. Anyway.
The stink hole is, we believe, pick five. We're going to tell you what to do. We think the first four picks are pretty obvious in most leagues. And the same four players are predominantly going in the first four picks. But what do you do with picks 5 through 12? We'll tell you a little later in the show when we venture into the stink hole and beyond.
Wow. You've been working on that radio voice.
I was practicing on that a little bit. We'll identify the bell cow runners around the league. We'll talk about the teams that have the most vacated targets. So there's some opportunities to find an up-and-coming player. And then perhaps the annual highlight of the preseason of Fantasy Football Weekly, the reach around. Yes, we will be providing a player upon whom you can reach a round on in every round of your draft.
We used to do this at the live training camp event, which unfortunately we're not doing this year, but there was nothing better than doing reach arounds
in front of hundreds of people.
Oh, yeah.
Thousands. Yeah.
Thousands.
Exactly. Yeah. Absolutely true.
Sometimes you got to pay to see stuff like that.
It was free.
But first, we do a quick zip around the NFL training camps, preseason games, and find out what you may have missed. What are the big stories for each team, beginning with the Carolina Panthers, Matt?
Practicing against the Ravens this week, and the offensive line is very messy for the Panthers. Taylor Moten, who is the normal right tackle, getting reps at left tackle since Cameron Irving is out. And mixing and matching the O-line is always just a really great sign for everybody. Mm-hmm. They also signed Markell Harrell, who was recently cut by the Raiders to the offensive line. They're in flux a little bit there.
Bad offensive line anyway.
Yeah.
And now reason to think, you know, it could potentially be the worst in the league. Let's go to the Raiders.
Yeah,
Brian.
Let's go to Las Vegas. Sounds good to me, where Darren Waller has returned to practice. Hallelujah. That's pretty much the biggest news coming out of Las Vegas this past week.
All right, I'll go to Green Bay, where I have several injury updates. After playing well last week, Jordan Love's shoulder injury is going to keep him out of this weekend's preseason game and maybe longer than that. Aaron Rodgers returned to practice after missing some time, so good news there. A.J. Dillon nursing a calf injury but should be back soon. And non-injury news from the Packers, Robert Tonyan continuing to get rave reviews, and he keeps inching up. Every week I move him up a spot or two on my rankings. He could be sitting on a really nice season. Let's go to the Washington football team, Matt.
Seventh-round rookie wide receiver Dax Milne is drawing praise from Ron Rivera in camp, calling him a great route runner with good size. Had a decent showing in the preseason opener, which included a nice punt return. You know, coaches love those guys who can chip in on special teams, too. He's got a chance to be a third or fourth wide receiver there in Washington.
All right. Brian, let's go to Buffalo.
I am very excited about this, and you are as well, Charge. I can only imagine Zach Moss returned to practice.
I'm glad.
And and he's going to be my RB1 when I take down our Empire League this year, fellas. Zach Moss, bank it. Bank on it.
Houston Texans, the Athletic reporters say that Philip Lindsay could lead the team in carries. And if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, we mentioned that their first depth chart that they published had Philip Lindsay and Mark Ingram as co-starters. And we're like, what? But that might actually be the case.
I noticed on Underdog's ADP this week that Lindsay is now one above David Johnson.
And I think that is appropriately so. And David Johnson's looking like this is a real danger for him. And then Tyrod Taylor appears to be headed for the team's week one starter role. Let's head over to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Matt.
Antonio Brown got thrown out of practice after ripping off the helmet and punching Titans corner Chris Jackson during joint practices. Fiery competitor or psycho? You be the judge.
I think we already know. Cleveland Browns, Brian.
We all know OBJ in Cleveland, right? But
I'm
we
familiar.
Need to get to know DJP, Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's been lighting up camp.
You said DJP. DPJ.
I was seeing if you guys, I knew I was going to mess that up. DPJ, Donovan Jones Peoples. No, Donovan Peoples Jones.
Something
DPJ.
Peanut and jelly. No.
Donut?
Maybe
peanut
jelly.
Peanut and jelly. That sounds
good. We'll work this out. We'll workshop this off
but
here.
DPJ has looked great. Last year, he was the 25th wide receiver taken in one of like the deepest rookie classes. He finished fourth in that class, though, in average yards per route run. Showed some flashes late after OBJ went down. During weeks 13 through 15, DPJ posted the second most yardage on throws 20-plus yards downfield. He's going to be the third wide receiver for the Browns. Looking good.
Indianapolis star beat writer Jim Aiello, after sniping me one pick before I was going to take Paris Campbell, took Paris Campbell, and then after he took him, told me that no receiver in camp has gotten more consistent separation than Paris Campbell.
Good job, Jim.
His speed has returned as well, as evidenced by his long reception in the first preseason game. Remember, in Campbell's one full game last year, he only got one because that's how Paris Campbell rolls. Six catches, 71 yards, and he rushed for 9 more yards on top of that. He's a freakish athlete and a nice sleeper.
That sounds like insider drafting from Aiello. Is that allowed to?
Well, he just did it to me. The Detroit Lions, Matt.
Dan Campbell called himself an a-hole after cutting long snapper Don Muehlbach on his 40th birthday. But in all seriousness, Tyrell Williams appears to be the top wide receiver on the depth chart as of now, and he's probably worth a late-round flyer in most leagues.
Let's go to the Jets.
Zach Wilson and Corey Davis have been clicking as of late. Right now, Corey Davis is going off the board roughly around wide receiver 50.
Yeah.
Seems a little late for a guy they just paid a lot of money to and is probably going to get leaned on heavily by the rookie quarterback in New Jersey.
I keep talking about the Chiefs' offensive line, partly because it was the team's biggest storyline in the offseason, but also because it's constantly in flux. As it stands right now today, the five starters across the Chiefs' offensive line have combined 0 NFL snaps as a member of the Chiefs.
Mm.
3 of them have 0 snaps in their NFL careers. So there's Orlando Brown, who is the left tackle. He was in Baltimore before. Left guard Joe Thuney was in New England before. But then after that, it's all disaster. Right now, your starting center is Creed Humphrey, a rookie. Your right guard is Trey Smith, a rookie. And sophomore right tackle Lucas Niang has never played an NFL snap. This bears watching. Much of our optimism for the Chiefs being better than last year has been built on that offensive line. Next up, the Seattle Seahawks.
Rookie wide receiver Dwayne Eskridge came off the PUP earlier this week, and Russell Wilson's helping him catch up. They've completed some early morning workouts, and he's likely the third wide receiver on the depth chart behind Metcalf and Lockett.
Okay. Brian, Broncos.
Melvin Gordon back in action. He has missed most of the preseason with a minor groin injury. Javonte Williams, kind of a little bit of a head start there. I think we all like him to win that job in Denver, but Gordon is officially back in the mix in that our running back competition.
Xavier Jones has emerged as the second running back for the Rams, and he's likely to get work in the regular season as the second running back as well. He got the start for the Rams in the first preseason game. He's known for his pass catching, and he caught 3 balls in that preseason game, and I think he's going to chip in through the air that way. And remember from a couple of shows ago, Sean McVay said that he wants to be careful about not overusing Daryl Henderson. And so there's going to be some extra usage to be had here. And right now it looks like it's Xavier Jones. Next up, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, Philly rested almost everyone in their Thursday night preseason loss to the Patriots. They lost 35-0. So the lone bright spot was Devonta Smith getting constant separation from the Pats defensive backs. Noted Jalen Hurts missed the game. He went to the hospital with a stomach infection.
Yeah.
He's going to be out for a few days this week.
Okay. Miami Dolphins, Brian.
Concerns there will be a running back by committee. Concerns really for Myles Gaskin truthers like myself.
Yeah.
A committee with Malcolm Brown and Salvin. I forgot his first name. Salvin Ahmed.
Yes.
I'm not too worried though. Malcolm Brown, two carries inside the 10 in the first preseason game, stuffed on both. I think they're more like goal line carries.
Yeah.
I'm weathering the storm with Miles Gaskin. He will be the lead back for the Dolphins, but we might be looking at a committee. But Gaskin's still the favorite in my mind.
And Malcolm Brown got a lot of usage that I didn't want to see.
Yeah, but he did not do very well in those attempts.
Nobody ever wants to see Malcolm Brown.
No, that's probably true. Vikings, we've already detailed their offensive line woes in back-to-back shows, which should really be the big story here and that you need to be tracking. But I'll also mention that Justin Jefferson returned to practice, and there is basically no doubt he will be ready for the start of the season. Philadelphia Eagles, Matt.
I already did Philly, so I'm going to do Dallas.
Dallas Cowboys, Matt.
Zeke slimmed down this offseason in an effort to be more explosive than durable, and he was quoted earlier this week that he thinks that the bell cow running back is dead and that the quality of his runs are more important than the quantity. So Zeke might just be reacting to Tony Pollard being a better back and saying, oh, man, I got to get these runs ahead
of the storyline a little bit. Let's go to the Patriots. Brian.
The Patriots, who just played the Eagles on Thursday night,
yes.
And everyone looked great for New England.
Cam Newton,
Damian Harris, Ravondre Stevenson looked great again, and now J.J. Taylor, a running back that has also garnered some attention in the fantasy community. So maybe there's some assets on the New England Patriots, but everyone's going to look good against the Eagles this year. It's a team that you'll be circling.
Damian Harris should be going higher than he is. He's getting, you know, consistently in back-to-back games, he has gotten basically all of the meaningful rushing work with the first team offense.
Ramondre Stevenson does not concern you, though?
No.
He looks great.
He does not concern me beating up third string defenses yet, but he does look very good. And I like that they brought him in what was it, maybe the late second quarter for that touchdown run on Thursday night.
Well, Harris was beating second string. Well, the Eagles are just eternally third string, but anyway.
The Saints have a constantly in flux set of receivers, and let's just detail where they are and some updates. Michael Thomas ahead of schedule per Sean Payton. Tre'Quan Smith returned to practice after missing time with an unspecified injury. He should be the team's top receiver in the preseason opener. Marquez Callaway shined in last week's preseason game, and he's drawn positive reviews in camp. He would be the other starter in week one. And just a quick quarterback update as Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston battle here. Taysom Hill started last week's preseason game, looked inconsistent through three series. Jameis Winston came in for five series. I thought he looked a little better, and he had two touchdown drives. We do expect Winston to run the first team offense on Monday night, and we'll know more then. Let's go to the New York Giants, Matt.
There's not a lot in Giants land, but Austrian running back Sandro Platzgummer.
Oh, God, I love that name.
Yeah, had a 48-yard run in the preseason game against the Jets last week. And I just wanted an opportunity to say Sandro Platzgummer twice in a show.
And let's go to the Titans.
I meant to tell you before we started recording that the Titans have no important news coming out of their camp right now, so nothing to talk about there.
The Steelers' Chase Claypool suffered a minor ankle sprain and will miss some time. He is expected, though, to be available for week one. Let's go to the Falcons.
When Dolphins safety Eric Rowe heaps praise on Kyle Pitts, it's time to listen a little bit. He said of Pitts, "He's long, he's strong, and he's about to get the friction on." No, that's not really it. That was somebody else. Well, that's partially true, though. Rowe did say that he believed Pitts would cause problems for defenses this year.
All right. And Cincinnati, Brian?
Not a lot of news coming out of Cincy either, but that's kind of what you want right now. We don't want to hear anything bad about Joe Burrow or Joe Mixon. Probably the most boom or bust offense in fantasy football from Burrow to Mixon. The Cincinnati Bengals are. We'll just have to see what happens there. But as of right now, all is quiet on the Midwestern front.
In San Francisco, Trey Lance looked inconsistent in his first NFL preseason game last week. He had that beautiful deep bomb that you probably saw to Trent Sherfield, but he also badly misfired on several other passes and got sacked four times. Meanwhile, Jimmy Garoppolo went 3-for-3 in his lone drive. Several starters did not play in that game, including Raheem Mostert, who, by the way, being badly overlooked, I think, in fantasy leagues. He's your starting running back on a very good offense. We'll get another look at the Niners on Sunday night, and we'll learn a little bit more about Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo at that time. Arizona Cardinals, Matt.
Did you say Austria Cardinals? Because I learned that Arizona has an Austrian player named
really?
Bernard Sykovits.
I like it.
Whose nickname is obviously Psycho. He's it Dan Arnold's replacement at tight end, by the way. And he'll probably be a practice squad player, but maybe he'll be better than Dan Arnold in Arizona. Maybe.
Unlikely. It's Psycho that they let Arnold walk. That's for sure.
Next up, the Jacksonville Jaguars, Brian.
Jacksonville kind of reaffirming that James Robinson is their lead running back. Yeah. And I fear, and I know you like this comp chart, I told it to you earlier in the offseason, the Reggie Bush role for Travis Etienne.
Yeah, that'd
or
be bad.
Travis Etienne.
Etienne?
I like ETN. Well, yeah. I think we should stick with the generally approved pronunciation of his
generally.
Name.
That's it.
Okay. I wasn't sure you were done. Baltimore Ravens have injuries on their offensive line, Ben Cleveland and Kevin Zeitler, and injuries to their wide receivers, Sammy Watkins, Rashad Bateman, Marquise Brown, all guys that are severe enough that the Ravens may choose to actually sit Lamar Jackson in Saturday night's preseason game and just not play him because of the offensive line, and he's got no receivers to throw to anyway. And honestly, that might actually make some sense. Let's go to the Chicago Bears, Matt.
Andy Dalton will get the start in Saturday night's preseason game and get at least a quarter of a half. But that means when the second teams come in.
A quarter of a half?
A quarter and a half.
Oh,
of
okay.
Play.
Got it.
But when the second teams come in, it'll be Justin Fields going against Bills quarterback Sad Trombonski.
Yep.
Or maybe it'll be Happy Trombonski because he's in a revenge game against the Bears. Lock
can
it in for your DFS preseason.
Can you have a preseason revenge game?
I think Mitchell Trubisky might have one.
Maybe. I saw Tariq Cohen had tweeted, any Bears fan who boos Sad Trombonski, you are weird and sad. Which I thought was pretty nice.
Trombonski.
Our final team is the San Diego Chargers, Brian.
Donald Parham's stock is on the rise.
Ooh.
6'8", 240-pound tight end from short-lived XFL fame. Seen a lot of time in two tight end sets for the Chargers, lining up a lot in the slot, on the outside. We know Mike Williams always gets hurt. Keenan Allen doesn't have the cleanest injury history.
Yeah.
Donald Parham. Keep your eye on him. I would stash him if you got an empty spot in Dynasty Leagues right now as well.
It's fantasy draft season. If you've got a draft coming up, you can get my personal cheat sheet available for free at guillotineleagues.com. When we come back, we'll identify the bell cow running backs around the NFL. Which guys are sure to get a lot of touches? Find out when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly. Thank you for listening. I'm Paul Ciarchi and GuillotineLeagues.com. Matt Harrison with me, Brian Johnson as well. Everybody wants to have bell cow backs because at the end of the day in fantasy, opportunity is more important than talent.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, I've asked you, challenged you.
You always challenge me.
I always challenge
you.
To identify the bell cow running backs. Some are obvious.
Yeah.
Alvin Cook and Derrick Henry are bell cow running backs. But as you get deeper into this, there's some non-obvious bell cows, and let's hear what you've come up with.
Well, we're going to cover all 32 teams in this segment. We're going to divide them into four categories. There's the three bells category.
That's a lot of bells. That's actually like 80 bells right there.
Okay.
Hold on. How about?
Ow, that kind of hurt.
It does hurt.
They're projected for over 300 touches, and there's little to no competition.
Uh-huh. That's thus the three bells, 300
yes.
touches. Are the two bells 200 touches?
Two bells I have projected for over 250 touches with some competition.
Okay. We call it 222 because of the two bells.
Sure,
okay.
Whatever.
All right, thanks.
And one bell, they're still going to get around 200 touches, but there's lots of variance and there's competition.
Okay.
And then there's workhorses, which is a split backfield, but we think that they're going to get a little bit more of the share.
Okay.
All right.
I think I got it.
So let's start with three bells, Charge. Oh, gosh, that's almost knocked me over. I have six of them. We're not going to discuss them in great detail, though. But it might be worth handcuffing their backups. That's Christian McCaffrey. His handcuff would be Chuba Hubbard, Dalvin Cook with Alexander Mattison, Derrick Henry, with Darrington Evans, Alvin Kamara with Latavius Murray. Then it gets a little interesting. My other two bell cows are Joe Mixon.
Oh.
With Chris Evans or Samaje Perine as the backup. And Najee Harris.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be accurate.
With Benny Snell, I guess, as the backup. The Steelers have generally gone with a bell cow running back mentality under Mike Tomlin. Now let's get to the two bell running backs where there's more interesting stuff happening here.
Okay.
Do you want to give me two bells?
Yeah, I do.
Awesome. Let's start with Ezekiel Elliott, and then I'm going to talk about the red flags of each of these guys, why they're not three bells.
Okay.
Ezekiel Elliott's got some diminishing touches in each of his last 3 years. Tony Pollard is good. The offensive line has gotten worse, and Dak's injury history is questionable at best. Although, even Zeke doesn't quite believe in a thing called bell cows anymore.
As we mentioned in the last segment. Yes.
Next guy, Aaron Jones. His red flags. What if A.J. Dillon is really that good and they can't keep him off the field anymore? Dillon showed flashes last year late in the season. He's kind of an interesting play.
Yeah, the reason I'll differ with you here, is, and from a carries standpoint, I agree with that, but I think those Jamal Williams receptions will go to Aaron Jones and that will keep his total touch total high.
It could. Let's talk about Nick Chubb next from Cleveland. Red flags, missed a month last season with an injury. And Kareem Hunt got paid and is a very capable 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
Jonathan Taylor is next. His red flags. Frank Reich comes from a no bell cow philosophy.
Correct.
Marlon Mack returns and has been looking good. And Nyheim Hines was all right last year, too. Plus Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson are both going to miss the start of the season. Next, Austin Eckler. Red flags. It starts with his health. He's a pass-catching machine, but he's never averaged more than 11 carries per game in a season.
Yeah.
That's not
shockingly
enough.
Low. Yes.
No backups, though, to scare you for
no,
Austin Eckler.
No, although, well, you know, we really don't know what this new offense is going to look like.
That's true.
The Joe Lombardi offense. But, you know, the hope is that it's going to be like Alvin Kamara, where there's Latavius Murray's always sprinkled in, right? But Alvin Kamara was still the focal point of that, of the running backs, and we're going to hope that that is the case here with Austin Eckler.
Absolutely. A guy that a lot of people probably consider a bell cow, Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
His red flags are he hasn't been healthy in 2 years. His offensive line is one of the worst in the league. Jason Garrett, Coach Garrett is his offensive coordinator. And Daniel Jones doesn't seem good.
Yeah,
there's a lot of red flags there.
There are a lot of red flags. And you think that could affect his total number of touches.
They might be three and out all year.
By the way, he has that Texas twang, Coach Garrett. He grew up like in New Jersey.
You know, it. You know, eventually, though, you spend.
I don't know.
Time.
I think he's just pretending. Really he's acting in the very poorly. Ugh,
all right, let's. Are there any other two bell cow runners?
I got looks like six more.
Oh my! Okay.
Yeah, Antonio Gibson. His red flags not utilized very heavily in the passing game last year in favor of J.D. McKissic.
Yeah,
Washington was strangely pass heavy last year and should be again with Stewbeard at the helm. But will it include a huge uptick for Gibby? We're not really sure. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, red flags, hasn't proven to be a consistent short yardage back and could get spelled in that sense.
And at his size, I just don't think it ever, that part of his game ever comes together.
Well, and his offense just might be too efficient. Patrick Mahomes is stealing his touches and touchdowns. J.K. Dobbins, red flags. Gus Edwards.
My guy.
Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
And he wasn't utilized enough in the passing game last year. David Montgomery, he was kind of a bell cow last year, but his red flags, he was a product of having no other runners on the depth chart last season, and Damian Williams is more than capable of handling the pass-catching role and some possible goal line duties. Chris Carson, red flags. Injury issues have caused him to miss time in each of the last 3 years.
Yeah, although not, he hasn't had like the ACL. You know, he has the lingering four-week injuries kind of thing.
Yeah. Darrell Henderson, he's the last one in the two bell scenario here. I don't think the coaching staff trusts him to be a bell cow, or they probably wouldn't have used their top pick in 2020 on Cam Akers. Xavier Jones has been turning heads in the passing game, and Sean McVay has been a hot hand guy since Todd Gurley left. So those are the red flags on Darrell Henderson.
Okay.
Let's move on to the one bell guys. These are guys who, things that need to break exactly right for them to be a bell cow. There's seven of them. DeAndre Swift is the first one. His red flags, Jamal Williams might split carries or take at least a 40% share. Jared Goff's not a great quarterback, and the passing game has very little that scares defenses. And Swift did miss three games with injury last year. Josh Jacobs, red flag, Kenyon Drake, stealing touches, especially near the goal line. And the offensive line took a significant step backwards. Miles Sanders, red flags that he missed four games last year with injury and was replaced in the passing game a lot by Boston Scott last year. Jordan Howard might be the goal line guy, and Kenneth Gainwell is a guy they seem to really like in camp. Mike Davis, his red flags, are we sure that he's actually good?
Yeah, I'm not with you on this. Well, I can't imagine. He's not, Mike Davis is not a great runner, but he's an okay runner, and there's nobody else on the team to carry a ball. So I think he will do better than one bell, bell cow.
Atlanta's line did take a step backwards with the loss of Alex Mack, but he doesn't really have stiff competition. Miles Gaskin, red flags, as much as no one wants to hear it, Malcolm Brown will get work.
Yeah.
So will Salvin Ahmed. And head coach Brian Flores is from the Bill Belichick tree and has already hinted at the running back by committee. Damian Harris, red flags, Bill Belichick, Sony Michel, James White, Ramondre Stevenson, and Cam Newton. That's five names that are in his way of being a bell cow runner.
And J.J. Taylor now. People love J.J. Taylor.
I'm still optimistic. I'm
optimistic, too. I got a lot of Damian Harris shares, but I'm still a little nervous. Michael Carter, his red flag is he's a rookie. Their defense is putrid and got worse this week with injuries. That should lead to negative game scripts, and the Jets have been bad for a really long time since. But still, he's the best runner they've had, maybe since LaDainian Tomlinson.
Once again, I disagree. I just think there's nobody else to carry a ball there. They got an offensive line with back-to-back first-round picks on it. I think he's going to be better than you do, Michael Carter.
I think Tevin Coleman is going to get a lot more touches than everybody wants.
No, if he stays healthy, why not?
No,
he was good.
He's not good. Coleman's not good. He's never been good.
I think we all agree that Tevin Coleman's not good. But
absurd.
Their head coach came from San Francisco, and Tevin Coleman came along the way with him. He's going to be there. Zach Moss, last one, red flags, needs to stay healthy, but he's a better blocker, goal line back, and receiver than Devin Singletary. Finally, we go to the workhorses. There we go. You're all ready. There's six of these, a split backfield, but we think they're going to get slightly more than half.
Yep, and we need to zip through these six.
They're going to be quick. Javonte Williams over Melvin Gordon. Raheem Mostert and the Shanahanigans in San Francisco, which could include Trey Sermon and Wayne Gallman, maybe even Jeff Wilson. Travis Etienne, the rookie in Jacksonville, should take over for James Robinson, but it might take him a month or so to get there. Chase Edmonds will split carries with James Conner unless Conner gets hurt. Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette and Gio Bernard. It will be impossible to peg who the Bucs' top runner is in any given week.
It's the worst scenario in the league.
And last but not least, Houston, stay away.
Probably a good idea. And that might be the worst in the league. When we come back, the stink hole. We know what the first four picks are like in most leagues. Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara. But then what? The stink hole is pick five. What to do with the stink hole and beyond in the first round?
Beyond.
When we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian, Matt Harrison, Brian Johnson with you. If you haven't tried a guillotine league yet, we encourage you to give it a shot. 18 teams start the season, one for every week, no head-to-head. And at the end of every week, the low-scoring team gets cut from the league, and their entire roster goes to the waiver wire where pandemonium ensues.
Even guys like Alvin Kamara?
A whole draft's worth of players.
Wow.
So it might go Alvin Kamara, and then maybe the second round was Patrick Mahomes, and the third round was, Keenan Allen, and the fourth round was Daryl Henderson, and they're all on the waiver wire. It's tremendous strategies. You figure out how much to bid on those players as opposed to saving for later. And the best part is you don't have to be the best team. Just don't be the worst team. If you cannot finish last, you can win your guillotine league. Last team standing wins it all.
If you ain't last, you're first.
That's right.
Yeah.
That could be our motto for this.
It should be.
We believe pick five is this year's stink hole, if you will, where the first four picks are pretty universally Christian McCaffrey, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara. And then after that, all the remaining players feel like they have some blemish to them, one of which being they're not a running back. And a lot of our listeners just cannot conceptualize the notion of not taking a running back.
Have they never heard of do the opposite?
They've never heard of do the opposite. So we're here to give you advice on what to do with the stink hole, the fifth pick, all the way through the rest of the first round. We think this is the order in which to take players. And we begin at pick number five, the stink hole pick.
Mm.
You've got pick five. Those four runners are off the board. What do? You take Travis Kelce. You know who has regretted drafting Travis Kelce? Nobody ever.
You know what, though? I think that you said the exact same thing about Michael Thomas last year.
Hey, it can happen. He has been tight end one for three straight years. In the past 6 years, Travis Kelce has missed two games, and they were both in week 17s.
Yeah.
And last year's tight end one was also wide receiver three.
Yes.
Four at worst. Yeah.
He's an elite player in every meaningful metric: depth of target, catch rate, drop rate, yards after catch, yards per game. I mean, any metric you want, Travis Kelce is phenomenal. He's a beast in the red zone, garnering an average of 25% of all of Kansas City's red zone targets over the last 5 years. That's amazing. And Patrick Mahomes is the most talented quarterback to ever play the game. Last week, you guys may remember, in our Peacock Off segment, I said Patrick Mahomes is going to set the league's all-time passing record, single-season passing record, for both touchdowns and yardage in one season, and it's coming here, and nobody is going to get help more than Travis Kelce at pick five of your first round of the stink hole. So let's go to the next spot. You've got pick six in the first round. Matt, who is the appropriate person to take here?
I think you take Davante Adams, because what's not to like about Davante Adams? If he's not your wide receiver one on your board, he's maybe number two.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the MVP of the league at quarterback, who's frankly pissed off and playing for a chance to get away from Green Bay.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, Adams is also in a contract year, so he's motivated to get his big final payday. Double-digit touchdowns in four of his last five seasons, including 18 touchdowns in 14 games last year.
Yeah.
Him, along with Robert Tonyan, are the red zone runners. They're the infrared zone runners. They get the ball through the air. It's absolutely amazing, and Davante Adams is a perfect pick at six.
All right, at pick seven, Brian, who is the appropriate person to take, the perfect person to take at pick seven?
It is another wide receiver, and his name is Tyreek Hill. And, Charge, I'm going to take this opportunity to recommend your premium cheat sheet on guillotineleagues.com, because it's going to give me all the information I need to make this pick at 107. Tyreek Hill, who is wide receiver two last year, wide receiver five the first half of the season, wide receiver two the second half of the season.
Yes.
Very consistent. 53% of his games, he finished top 12.
Yeah.
At wide receiver. That is very good.
That's very good.
20% of his games were outside of the top 30. That's also a very good metric in that category.
Very few dud games.
And outside of Travis Kelce, there's no one catching passes from Patrick Mahomes. I'm not worried about Mecole Hardman or Byron Pringle or even Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for that matter. It's all Kelce and it's all Hill and the most dynamic offense in the NFL. So take Tyreek Hill. You won't be upset.
Can I tell you why I love having Tyreek Hill on my teams?
No.
Because when Patrick Mahomes takes that extra two steps on his drop back and he's launching a rocket deep downfield and that ball is at its midway apex, you know who he's throwing to, and I'm already off the couch because it may be a 60-yard bomb to Tyreek Hill.
Smacks of Randy Moss back in the day.
It does, doesn't it?
Yep.
And it's fun. Tyreek Hill is so fun to have on your team, and that's why I love to have him. And that's why, he is my top-ranked wide receiver, is because fantasy football is supposed to be fun. I want to have a bunch of players I have fun with on my team. Next, Aaron Jones with the 8th spot in the first round. Last year, he was running back 5. Jamal Williams is gone now, and we're taking him as running back 5 in the first round. A couple of shows ago, I explained how Jamal Williams' departure was going to vault Aaron Jones into elite fantasy territory through receptions. I already talked about that a little bit earlier in this show. Williams was good for 40-ish targets per year. That they got to go somewhere, and A.J. Dillon can't catch. So, well, or at least they didn't target him. They targeted him three times all of last year. So I think Jones has the opportunity to get even better here. And the Packers have been almost perfectly judicious in their use of Aaron Jones, with enough touches to be an excellent fantasy producer, but not so many that he's an injury risk. Jones may lose some goal line carries to A.J. Dillon, but not necessarily. Jones got 10 carries inside the 5-yard line last year, and he scored 5 times. A 50% conversion rate's very good inside the 5-yard line. So, Aaron Jones, very safe, and he's got literally RB1 upside to him. If A.J. Dillon doesn't pan out and they really need to lean on Aaron Jones, he could be the highest scoring running back in football, and we're going to take him at pick number 8. Let's go to pick 9. Who's the perfect player to take, Matt?
Austin Eckler, but I feel like Brian should be presenting the case here, but let's just go over it again. Chargers offensive line, much improved. Coaching, much improved. Justin Herbert in year 2. Eckler is healthy, as far as we know, and as far as fantasy points per touch, he's pretty much the top dog in the league. He has league-winning upside if he gets the requisite workload.
Yes, but as you elucidated earlier in the show, he's averaged 11 carries per game.
And that in his top season.
Yes, in his top season, right.
11 carries per game.
That's
now, he does work a lot in the passing game.
The backup in those years, though, essentially, though. He was the third down back.
His best year. So you're saying 11 carries in his best year,
Melvin Gordon was there for 12 of the games. So
that's what I'm saying. Yeah. He wasn't the lead guy like he is now.
He is the lead guy now.
He was the lead guy last year. He didn't get a lot of
time. He got hurt.
Well, still, he would have averaged. He played half the season.
Yeah.
Still didn't average better than 11 carries. All right, so we believe that's the perfect player.
Huge upside. Huge upside,
yes.
Though.
I just want parts of the Chargers offense.
Mm-hmm.
That was pick 9. We're going through the stinkhole and beyond, picks 5 through 12 in the first round. Let's go to the perfect player for pick number 10. Ryan?
This is the time to take Ezekiel Elliott, who there's no sugarcoating it, has been a pretty bad player to have on your fantasy team the last couple of years. But he looks primed for a bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
He's in shape. Dak Prescott will be back, we think.
He'll be back.
And most importantly, because it all starts in the trenches, the Cowboys' offensive line should return to elite status after getting obliterated by injuries last season. Mm-hmm. Left tackle Tyron Smith only played 154 snaps. He will be back. Right tackle Lyle Collins missed the entire season due to hip surgery. He will be back. Zach Martin, still one of the best right guards in the game. Left guard Connor Williams finished 17th overall in Pro Football Focus's grading. The only real question is at center, but they do have a healthy competition there. So as long as Zeke stays healthy, the line stays healthy, Dak stays healthy, he'll pay off this 1-10 pick. Yes, Tony Pollard is a concern, but Zeke shouldn't fall any further than this. This is the perfect time to take him.
All right, I like it. That was pick number 10. At pick 11, we've got Nick Chubb. Now, we can't get Chubb higher than this because he's not a workhorse back.
You can't?
I can't.
Sorry.
But on a different team, like team without Kareem Hunt, Chubb could be the first player taken, right? Different universe. Like
sure.
If he had dropped into the Vikings, right?
Yeah.
Instead of Dalvin Cook and you had a run first, workhorse mentality.
Absolutely.
Like Mike Zimmer has, Nick Chubb would be the first player taken. Chubb's Pro Football Focus ranking over the last 2 years was running back 9 and running back 1. He's very good. Kevin Stefanski will always run the ball. Last year, Stefanski had the 4th highest run rate. The year before, as Minnesota's offensive coordinator, Kevin Stefanski had the 4th highest run rate.
Mm.
So we can safely say they're going to run the ball a lot. Chubb led all backs in broken tackle rate last year and finished with a gaudy 5.6 yards per carry. We already know that Kareem Hunt's presence doesn't really take a lot away from Chubb, and he can be very fantasy successful regardless of whether Hunt is in or not. And even when Hunt played, Chubb still touched the ball 17 times per game.
That's great.
That's all you need. Pro Football Focus ranks the Browns' offensive line number one in the league, and that provides some safety for Nick Chubb as well. Some of those yards that you want him to get are going to come easily behind that offensive line. All right, let's go to our final player from the stinkhole and beyond. You've got the last pick in round one.
Mm-hmm.
Who you got?
I hope I have the first pick in round two, too.
Yeah, well, it usually works that way.
I'm going to start with Jonathan Taylor. He was the best running back in the league in the month of December, and I happen to believe that the last full calendar month of the year that we've seen all players play was December. So was that a sign of things to come? Was it desperation on the Colts' part trying to make the playoffs? Either way, if Wentz and Quentin Nelson return earlier than advertised, then all things are kind of pointing that they're kind of ahead of schedule, possibly maybe week two or week three, which would be really good. Jonathan Taylor is absolutely a steal because he was getting drafted at the 1-5 in April, May, and June in those super early drafts. So he has that upside. Can he get the bell cow touches, though? That's the big question. And we reviewed that a little bit in the last segment with Marlon Mack there and Nyheim Hines there.
I just had this conversation, again, referring to a friend of the show, Jim Aiello, from the Indianapolis Star, and asked him this very question about Jonathan Taylor earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
And he said Taylor is the clear number one, but he expected a rotation of backs.
Yeah.
He thought it would be less like December of last year and more like, or less like December and more like September, October, November, where they mixed and matched some backs. Although Taylor clearly has more confidence from the coaching staff now than he did last September.
Absolutely.
But it took a while to get there, and he thinks you're going to, you know, fantasy owners prepared to have some frustration there.
It was a slow start for Taylor, despite Marlon Mack went down in week one, too.
Right.
Don't forget that.
And we all thought
back.
Taylor was going to rock it at that point, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now, among the players who were not chosen yet for our first round, as we went through the stinkhole and beyond, the player that I would have had next, Antonio Gibson, would have been the next guy up for me because I love that whole offense to ascend in a significant way with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I love the addition of Curtis Samuel. And in the second year of ever playing running back, Antonio Gibson's going to get better, and he was already good. Not only was Gibson good at the stuff you figured he would have been good at last year as a converted wide receiver, we knew he could sprint to the outside. We knew that he was going to be good catching the ball after the catch, although they didn't throw to him enough. But he turned into a good inside runner as well. He was a tackle breaker. Things that you didn't know for sure Antonio Gibson could do, he did. And he was doing it against defenses that were all playing right by the line of scrimmage because they couldn't pass more than 10 yards downfield.
Sure.
Stewbeard's going to open up that whole field for the Washington offense, and that's going to make things a little bit easier for Antonio Gibson as well. So he would have been my next guy up.
I can make a case for Najee Harris as the next guy up, too. Mm-hmm. Mentioned it in the bell cow segment, last segment. He's got the opportunity to get 300 touches this year in Pittsburgh.
He does.
The wide receivers are good. The line is a little scary, and Big Ben probably doesn't scare people nearly as much anymore, but we've seen Pittsburgh Steeler running backs be top 12 running backs consistently as long as they have talent, and I don't think anybody's disputing the talent of Najee Harris right here.
Yeah, I'll dispute the talent of that offensive line all day, but still.
And I think it's important. We always harp on people replaying last year. Well, Najee Harris doesn't have a last year for most fantasy fans, and that's why rookies are depressed a lot. If you look at all of these second-year runners that we're talking about and second-year receivers that we're talking about in the first two rounds, get on that now. Identify these rookies.
And replaying last year, Stephon Diggs could have an even bigger. He certainly is in the conversation in the late first round.
Absolutely.
I think Diggs would have made sense. If you are in a bigger league especially, Darren Waller could go as early as pick 13. You know, it's, you know.
Getting excited
over different when you're in a bigger league, the differential between the, you know, the 12th or 14th or 16th or 18th if you're in a guillotine league tight end is really significant.
Well, and if you're in a league with Brian, you better take him before
fast.
Brian's second round pick.
Exactly. He's not getting past.
You're going to have to reach around on Waller.
He's not getting past the early second
when
in my
we
league.
Come back, three tough questions for our panel of experts. You can play along as Fantasy Football Weekly continues in moments. 2 of Fantasy Football Weekly. Thank you for joining us. If your draft is coming up, you'd like to get some player rankings that don't feel like everybody else's. That's what I do with mine at guillotineleagues.com. Try really hard not to fall into the groupthink of the fantasy experts out there, which happens a lot. And so I pride myself on having some really different rankings. That is available for free, guillotineleagues.com. I am Paul Charchian. My co-hosts are Matt Harrison and Brian Johnson. This is a game we like to call Three Tough Questions. We encourage you to play along.
Tough question number one.
Now that there are 17 regular season games, how much more important is handcuffing than in past years? No more important, a little more important, or a lot more important? Matt?
Oh no, there's 5.8% more games. What are we going to do now? If you didn't think handcuffing was important before, it's not more important now. If I have Dalvin Cook instead of taking Alex Mattison and locking up one backfield, I'd rather take Jamal Williams in the same round and potentially get two backfields if DeAndre Swift gets hurt. Sure, there's more risk and reward in that, but if you play fantasy to be safe all the time, have fun getting fourth place. Plus, I highlighted it last week. There's only been 5 running backs in the last 6 years that have been handcuffy guys that have finished in the top 15. Only 5 in 6 years. Less than one per year. It's not more important at all.
Okay. Brian, is it no more important, a little more important, or a lot more important to handcuff this year given the extra game?
Yeah, basically the same answer as Matt. You have to start with how important is handcuffing to you in general, and to me, it's not that important. I prefer to steal the handcuffs of other players.
Yeah.
Like in our Empire League, I'm kind of weak at running back. But I've got Chuba Hubbard, CMC's handcuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got Madison. I'm going to go after Darrington Evans. I love those three. One of them are going to hit, but I wouldn't. So it's not
most
any
likely
more important.
None of them are going to hit because
that's
only
true.
5 guys in
well,
6
true.
Years have done it.
Well, further proving the point, don't handcuff, really.
You're better off if you handcuff.
Yeah, you're better off trying to at least steal a handcuff than handcuffing your actual player. But it's no more important just because of one extra game. Come on, that's crazy.
The correct answer is no more important. We couldn't predict injuries when there were 16 games, right?
Correct.
And so, you know, it's not only to change because there's 17 now. Handcuffing, for the reasons Matt said very saliently, I believe, is a very dicey proposition.
You should just say stupid.
It is. It's kind of stupid. And the way you set it up is perfect. I can get Jamal Williams, who I could start in a pinch every week of the season.
Yeah.
Or I can have a backup running back who only gets the ball like 4 times a game, 5 times a game, and I can't start unless there's an injury to the starter.
And he's eating a roster spot.
And you're right. I'm killing a roster spot,
mm-hmm.
a valuable roster spot. So don't handcuff and don't let the worry warts of the 17-game schedule phase you.
The purse clutchers.
Tough question number 2.
Which quarterback has fantasy football's biggest risk-reward ratio? Brian.
For me, it's Dak Prescott. I know the offensive line in the last segment, we said it's going to return to elite status. His trio of receivers might be the best in the NFL. He should be making his return to full health, but I'm not convinced of that, that the ankle is going to hold up all season. He has the shoulder issue, and at quarterback 6, there's just way too much risk for me there. I'd rather just wait another round or two and grab an Aaron Rodgers or just an Air Bear. Dak Prescott, the biggest high-risk, high-reward quarterback for me this season.
All right. Matt, who is the quarterback with the highest risk-reward ratio?
I have the same answer, Dak Prescott, the injury history plus the upside. But you are taking him in the 4th or 5th round, and that's a scary proposition for a guy who hasn't been fully healthy in a year. Although, last year through his 4.5 weeks, he was on pace to be the best fantasy quarterback in the league, would probably have hit 5,500 passing yards, and he was on pace for 9 rushing touchdowns. So the upside is number 1 QB in the league. But the downside is what you got last year. He might not play or he might not be as effective.
There were 2 possible correct answers to this.
I will not accept another one.
Neither one is Dak Prescott. The quasi-acceptable answer, is Trey Lance because he may literally not play a game this year.
Okay.
There's a very real scenario where he has zero fantasy points for the year. But because he's a round 12 selection,
that is not the correct answer.
Definitely not.
The correct answer for the player with the highest risk-reward ratio is Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts.
Okay.
Round 6 ADP. Now, we didn't get to see him on Thursday night, which is unfortunate because it adds to the sense of mystery around whether or not he can pass. And that is the real question here. If we look at his four passing totals in his four starts last year, he had two 300-yard games. That's great. The other two games, 167 yards and 72 yards.
Mm.
Now, in the 72-yarder, he got pulled out in the fourth quarter. He got injured in the fourth quarter. So I'll grant him a little bit of leeway on that. But it was still not a good look for him. And as defenses saw him more, his passing seemed to get worse and worse. As mentioned last week, Jalen Hurts had the lowest completion percentage of any quarterback with at least four starts last year. His passing volatility puts a lot of pressure on his running game for you fantasy owner. Even elite runners like Lamar Jackson last year don't always run well. And there are better runners in this league than Jalen Hurts at the quarterback position. So eventually in the NFL, if you can't pass, you can't play quarterback. You can only do so much. And there is a scenario here that involves, at some point, Jalen Hurts getting benched.
True.
Now, the upside, however, is massive on Jalen Hurts. If it turns out he can pass. Well, now what you've done is you've taken Josh Allen as a quasi-functional passer and always a good runner and turned him into what he was last year when you could do both. When you can do both at the quarterback position, pass and run, that's fantasy magic right there. And that's why you've got the upside of an elite top five fantasy quarterback and the downside of a quarterback who gets benched for Joe freaking Flacco.
At least he can physically pass and run right now, as far as we know. Dak Prescott, not so sure.
No, Dak's been passing his whole life. He's going to be fine. Dak is going to be fine. I'm convinced Dak's going to be fine. He's my number 7 ranked quarterback right now.
Tough question number 3.
There is an opening in a new, there's an opening for a new team in your friends league.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody fills that opening with their 13-year-old kid. Are you cool with that, Matt?
I spent the last year teaching and coaching middle school kids. Mostly I don't tell them about the fantasy football aspect of my life because it's, you know, nerdy. But occasionally they find out. And when they find out, I got some really super intelligent questions from 12, 13, 14-year-olds. They follow the sport like never before, and it's because they've watched their parents play fantasy since birth. And they're cheering for players. They're watching the Monday night games. If the kid gets it and the kid's involved, let them play, unless you do your draft at a strip club.
All right. Brian,
yes,
there's an opening for a new team in your buddy's league. Somebody fills the opening with their 13-year-old kid. Are you cool with that?
Yeah, as long as I'm convinced the kid is into it and managing the team, that my buddy's not using his kid as a vessel for collusion.
Ooh, collusion!
But so overall, yes. Bring on the kids. They are our future.
Teach them well.
Are we cool with that? Hell no.
What?
Yeah, I want kids to play fantasy football. Of course I do. They can play with each other, or they can play in a family league. Keep your kid out of my friends league with a bunch of grown men. First off, the party atmosphere of your draft just got torpedoed, right? You've got a bunch of guys, gals, who have a long history together. They tell war stories. They drop F-bombs. They're drinking beer.
You didn't say we were having a live party.
Yeah.
But,
well, I don't know what lame drafts you go to. They're smoking. They're doing whatever. And all of that scuttled because somebody doesn't see their kid enough at home. They got to add the kid into your fantasy league.
Wow.
This is not going.
Now, next, what about my message board? My message board filled with smack talk, obscenities. That's what I want my message board to be with my friends. I don't need to have to self-censor because you decided to bring your seventh grader into the conversation.
I've been meaning to talk to you about our message board. We don't like the full frontal nudity pics that you keep posting, Charge.
Well, that's because they're mine.
I know.
And lastly, everybody, and this is to Brian's point, everybody's going to wonder about any transaction that involves the father and the kid. Is the dad pressuring the kid all day long at home, talking him into it, upping his allowance, whatever. I mean, it's a huge problem just from the integrity of the league. Look, we want kids to play. Play with each other. Have a cafeteria draft. Play with the rest of your family. Have aunts, uncles, nephews, strange cousins. Get that going.
The strange cousins.
Don't bring your seventh grader into my grown-up league. That's the correct answer.
Charge is not about the children.
No.
No. Angry.
You know, we
old
are.
Man.
You know what we do love, though? The reach around.
Yeah.
Coming up next.
Don't let your kids listen to this next segment.
That's right. Coming up next, the reach around. We will give you one player in every round to take a round earlier than his average draft round. Who is the seventh rounder you need to take in the sixth round because you want him on your team and you do not want to risk not getting him? The reach around coming up next. Charchian, GuillotineLeagues.com, Brian Johnson, GuillotineLeagues.com, and Matt Harrison's got a bunch of great stuff at ShockFantasy.com, including your Dynasty cheat sheets, your trade value calculator.
Yeah, Keeper League calculator. If you're like, I need to get Christian McCaffrey in the second round or Mike Evans in the fourth round, which one's a better value? Oh, there's a calculation for that.
There is.
Promo code radio if you want $15 off a membership.
This is a segment we call the Reach Around. We do it one time each year right here in this show. The premise, we give you a player that you should take one round earlier than his average draft round. For example, we will go through now and give you players that are going in the second round we believe you should take in the first round. We begin with Matt Harrison.
I don't know where we got this ADP from exactly, but Austin Eckler was listed as a second round pick. So I think that we covered that we'd pick him at pick 9 in the last segment. So I think Eckler's the play.
Yeah.
Brian?
You're obviously going to assume that is my answer as well.
We
already assumed that I would take it. I just want to remind everyone that in 2019, 92 catches for Austin Eckler. And that was really as like the primary third down back. Again, he is the lead back. The question is, how many touches will he get? I think he gets enough to easily clear 2,000 combo yards if he can stay healthy, but that's the concern with everyone in the NFL, if they can stay healthy.
All right, we're all on Austin Eckler as a second-round player that you should take in the first round, but I'll also mention Antonio Gibson, who I mentioned as well in this, who I think would have been a fine selection at the end of the first round as well. So Eckler, Gibson. Let's go to the third-round player you believe people should reach for in the second round, Matt.
A.J. Brown is listed as a third-round pick. I'd take him in the second because before Julio was traded to the Titans, many were considering Brown as the top wide receiver on their cheat sheets. And I don't understand why Jones coming in and drawing attention from the defense is a bad thing. He's not going to get any double teams all year with 8 in the box on Henry and Julio on the other side.
Okay. Brian, who is your third-round player you would reach for in the second round?
I was going to go A.J. Brown, but I thought I'd mix it up a little bit for the sake of the show. I went with Allen Robinson, who might be safer than A.J. Brown.
Maybe he might be.
The ceiling not as high, but Allen Robinson, one of three wide receivers last season with 150-plus targets. Can you guess the other two guys, by the way, real quick? Other two
Julio
receivers?
Jones.
No.
No, he's missed too much time. Target hogs. Diggs?
Diggs was one.
Hopkins.
Got it.
Yes.
And Allen Robinson. Now, Devontae Adams and Keenan Allen would have cleared that threshold, but they got a little injured. But Allen Robinson, whether or not it's Andy Dalton or Justin Fields, it'll probably be both a significant upgraded quarterback either way. And he'll be a target hog again and a very safe pick with a pretty sexy ceiling still, I think.
Pretty sexy.
The round three player I am reaching for in round two is Terry McLaurin.
Terry! Terry McLaurin.
He is the best receiver on an ascending offense led by a quarterback who can press the ball downfield, something Terry has never had before.
Terry.
He is going to get the best quarterbacking of his life, and he was already a wide receiver one producer. He has the opportunity to be a top five fantasy receiver. And by talent, he might even already be there by talent, but it's been suppressed by the likes of Alex Smith. So I take Terry McLaurin as my reach a round player in round three. Let's go to round four. Matt, who is the player you're reaching for, the fourth round player you're reaching for in round three?
That's Chris Godwin. The upside is the top wide receiver in the game because in 2019, with Jameis Winston at the helm, he finished as the second overall wide receiver behind Michael Thomas. And it was that Michael Thomas year where he caught 50 more passes than anyone else in the league. Godwin was also dinged up last year, so a healthy Godwin can probably win you your league.
Okay. Brian, who is the fourth round player you'd take in the third round?
Oh, you know it's Kyle Pitts, and the Falcons were not drafting a tight end in Kyle Pitts. They were drafting Julio Jones' replacement, who they knew they were going to lose a couple months later. A guy they did not utilize in the red zone, Julio Jones, but they're going to utilize Kyle Pitts in the red zone, the infrared zone, the end zone.
You've decided.
He's going to be catching passes in the auto zone. Oh, I've decided this. Hayden Hurst, Russell Gage, Brandon Powell, and Laquon Treadwell combined to score 11 touchdowns inside the 10-yard line last year. Those are all going to Kyle Pitts.
Every last one of them.
Every last one of them, and then some, who I prognosticated last week will score more touchdowns than teammate Calvin Ridley this year. Kyle Pitts in the third round. I've done it plenty. I'm going by what I say. Not just saying.
The fourth round player I'm taking in the third round, Lamar Jackson. You know, you talked 2 years ago, Matt, about Chris Godwin. How about 2 years ago? Lamar Jackson won league single-handedly.
Uh-huh.
He was one of the best fantasy players ever. And that was just, we're just 1 year removed from that. It could easily snap right back. He was not that non-functional last year. He was actually a pretty solid contributor most of the time. He just didn't have the gaudy passing numbers. And I know the receivers are hurt right now, but by the time the season gets here, his receiver group will be back in shape. Sammy Watkins will be there. Marquise Brown will be healthy. Everybody but Bateman will be ready to roll. I think Lamar Jackson's still got freaky upside, and I want a piece of that. As we continue our reach around, Matt, which fifth-round player will you take in the fourth round?
I've done this several times in my underdog drafts. It's Adam Thielen, who's emerged as Kirk Cousins' favorite red zone threat, even before Kyle Rudolph left the team, which is interesting. If healthy, his downside is probably 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns, but his upside is 1,300-plus and double-digit scores, so I like Adam Thielen right there.
All right. Brian, who is your fifth-round player you'd take in the fourth round?
I'm going with Cooper Kupp, who was wide receiver 5 in 2019. That was with Jared Goff at quarterback, who went off the rails last year for the Rams. Goff, that is. Clear upgrade at quarterback this year for Kupp with Matt Stafford coming into town. And, you know, as long as Kupp stays healthy, even when we're reaching around for him in the fourth round, this is a steal with a healthy Cooper Kupp.
All right. I also had Cooper Kupp for many of the same reasons.
Nice.
That offense is going to be so much better, and Kupp's going to bounce back nicely. Let's go to round number 6 of our reach around. Matt, who is the player, the sixth round player, you would take in the fifth round?
It's Justin Air Bear. Come on, Shark. There it is. Yeah.
You said it nice and slowly.
I appreciate that. I said he'd finish only behind Patrick Mahomes on last week's Peacock Off, and you can listen to that on any of your favorite podcast platforms, including iHeartRadio.
Mm-hmm.
So I better put my money where my mouth is, and I better draft him in the fifth round.
Okay. Brian, who is the sixth round player you are reaching for in round 5?
I'm going with Denver's rookie running back, Javonte Williams, who I just think flat out beats out Melvin Gordon at some point this year. Sort of has a head start already in training camp. Gordon's been a little dinged up, and I kind of like this Denver offense. They have the pass catchers to keep defenses honest.
Mm-hmm.
The quarterback, a little bit of a question mark, but maybe that means they just lean on the run game a little more, and I just really like what I've seen out of Javonte Williams. Of course, he hasn't played in the pros yet, but I've seen enough of Melvin Gordon, so I'll take a chance on Javonte in the fifth.
I'm feeling better. I'm starting to really vibe on the Denver offense, in part because starting to think Drew Lock might just be okay. And all I need is just like adequate quarterbacking.
You're really convincing yourself of this.
Well, a little bit. He looked very good against the Vikings,
right,
second and third stringers. And, you know, granted, that's not a great way to judge, but The training camp reports have been largely positive, and it's not like quarterbacks never get better. We mentioned Josh Allen recently, earlier in the show, as an inaccurate passer who got a lot better. Drew Lock's got room to get better. If he does, I like that offense a lot. But that's not my answer. The sixth-round player I'm taking in the fifth round, T.J. Hockenson. I think in a tier by himself after the big three tight ends, then you've got Hockenson, and then you've got everybody else. I know
You got Pitts significantly lower than Hockenson.
I do. Okay. I like Hockenson a lot. I think he's way, way safer than Pitts, who comes in with all the unknowns of a rookie player. Hockenson in his third year, that's a blow-up year for tight ends on a team that's going to be trailing most of the time, needs to pass, and has no functional receivers. Our reach around continues into the seventh round. Who is the seventh-round player, Matt, you would take in the sixth round?
I've got Courtland Sutton, and last year he was being drafted in the third or fourth round. Yeah, he missed the whole season due to injury, but he's certainly a guy with that pedigree of a guy that you can take three rounds earlier. So I like Courtland Sutton, and you guys just mentioned how you're starting to believe in the Denver Broncos offense a little bit.
A little bit. All right. Brian, who's the seventh-round player you'd take in the sixth round?
I love me some Tyler Boyd, who is the cheapest of Cincinnati's three wide receivers when it comes to ADP right now. Boyd was wide receiver 8 in the first half of the season last year with a healthy Joe Burrow. And yes, Jamar Chase wasn't there, but Boyd and Burrow clicking last year together. I've been clicking in camp so far. I think he leads the Cincinnati wide receivers in production this year.
The seventh-round player I'm taking in the sixth round is Damian Harris, the Patriots running back, who is getting all the run with the first team. He is coming off the field for some third downs, and that's just who he is. I don't think he's going to be a PPR helper, really.
That's James White's territory.
Largely James White's territory, and maybe others. But Harris is running hard and has looked good. And let's remember, as frustrating as running backs can be for the Patriots, they're only like two seasons removed from like Garrett Blunt having the most rushing touchdowns in the NFL.
And so, Harris was the Patriots' best player last year, like overall.
Best offensive player.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's you can certainly make a case for that. Now, obviously, this year it's Jonnu Smith.
Maybe.
We'll talk more about him later. Let's move to the eighth round of our reach around. We're going to go through 10 rounds. And let's pick up, Matt, with the eighth round player you would take in the seventh round.
I got Robert Tons of Funyan. He's been the standout in Packers camp so far. Caught 11 touchdowns last season. Packers don't run the ball near the stripe nearly as much as they probably should, thus making Davante Adams and Robert Tonyan super valuable as you get closer and closer to the end zone.
Makes sense. Brian, this is the eighth-round player you would take in the seventh round.
The one Houston Texan I'm willing to roster this year is Brandon Cooks, and I take him in the seventh round. Really don't know what's going to happen at quarterback in Houston, looking like a Tyrod Taylor week one start. All I know is for Deshaun Watson, when the feds are involved... Not looking too good for his prospects this year and beyond. But regardless of quarterback, Cooks will see a ton of volume and positive game scripts for wide receivers, that's for sure. I think 80 catches, 1,200 yards is in the cards, and he'll get you a 4, 5, 6 touchdowns as well. I'll take that in the seventh round.
My reach-around player that I'm taking in the seventh round with an eighth-round average draft position, Deebo Samuel, who I don't understand why he would go this low. This is a very, very promising offense. Deebo Samuel's a special talent. So good after the catch. And one of the Deebo Samuel stats that we have talked about on previous shows, he had the shortest average throw last year when it was Nick Mullins and C.J. Beathard and I don't know, whoever else.
His average depth of target.
Average depth of target was like 3 yards.
Okay.
It's going to stretch out this one way or another.
Really?
It's going to be longer downfield. And Deebo Samuel is so strong and so special after the catch that I believe he is sitting on a vastly superior season than the one he had last year, his value being suppressed a great deal, I think, just because of the injuries and the bad quarterback play from last season. All right, let's go to the ninth round of our reach around. Give me a ninth-round player you would take in the eighth round, Matt.
Another guy I've done a lot of reaching on is Zach Moss. We've outlined it a few times. Moss is the best pure runner, pass blocker, and pass catcher on the Bills roster. But he's getting that injury-prone label. If healthy, maybe.
Yeah, Zach Moss, let's go.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, for all the reasons Matt said. And Josh Allen can succeed at the goal line, but they don't want him to consistently take those hits. Zach Moss wasn't available to them to take those goal line. He will be this year. He's going to stay healthy. We're going to be positive.
Yeah, let's hope that's the case. And you guys know I'm Camp Moss. I want Zach to be great, but I'm taking AJ Dillon here because I feel
you're
safer.
Throwing a wrench in
there. I feel safer about AJ Dillon, and here's why. I know that I know he's going to get carries because I know Aaron Jones isn't going to be a 300 touchback. That's just not how they ever use him. So I know there is a sizable role for AJ Dillon. I want there to be a sizable role for Zach Moss, and there should be, but I can't tell you for certain there will be. AJ Dillon is the 9th round player I would take in the 10th round.
You're going for safety with that pick instead of the upside.
Yeah, charge. A little bit. That's not like me, by the way.
When I'm reaching, I'm always going for the upside.
Let's move our reach around to the 10th round. Give me a 10th round player you would take in the 9th round, Matt.
Jalen Waddle. Let's see who Tua's favorite wide receiver is. Probably his college teammate and a first round pick. It's not often you see rookie wide receivers slide right into the top of the depth chart, especially with capable players surrounding him. So Jalen Waddle, he's impressed in camp.
All right. Brian.
Mentioned earlier in the show how Corey Davis has really been clicking with Zach Wilson, so I would take him here in the 9th round. Right now, going as off the board at wide receiver 50, that's way too late for a guy who's going to command the most targets on the team, I think, especially in the red zone. They just paid the guy a ton of money. I still like Corey Davis.
The reach-around player I'm going to take in the 9th round with a 10th round average draft position is Tyler Higbee, tight end for the Rams. Last year, if you combined Gerald Everett and Tyler Higbee into one tight end, you had tight end 5.
Mm-hmm.
Gerald Everett is now in Seattle. Higbee is basically running alone with tight ends, and he'll be on the field way, way more than he ever has been before. I'm going to try Tyler Higbee as that player, that tight end. If you slump that tight end position, I feel pretty confident about going to war with Tyler Higbee. Our final reach around round is the 11th round player you would take in the 10th round, Matt.
I'm looking for that upside play again, and I think the biggest upside in this round was Justin Fields. Once he starts, his accuracy and elusiveness should make him one of the most dangerous players in the league and could be just a fantasy all-star for the second half of the season.
Brian, who is your 11th round player you would take in the 10th round?
I'm going with Jamal Williams now with the Detroit Lions. We talked about TJ Hockenson earlier. We're going to talk about the Detroit passing game later. But outside of Hockenson, Jamal Williams might be the best receiver on that team. And he certainly can handle running back duties, especially if DeAndre Swift goes down. He's already been a little banged up in camp already. I'm not convinced he can stay healthy a whole season or be a workhorse for that matter.
I also had Justin Fields, league-winning upside if everything breaks right for Justin Fields. If he can pass and throw, yeah, that's really, really tempting, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that would be great. Well, there you go. This year's Reach Around is in the books. When we come back, our final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly, including our sleepers for this week and the key teams with vacated targets, an opportunity to fill in with a new player. Stay tuned. Final segment, Fantasy Football Weekly, coming up next. If you've always wanted to try a guillotine league, this is the time. Not only can you find publicly available guillotine leagues at guillotineleagues.com, but if you've got friends who want to play, we support guillotine leagues, private leagues with you and your friends, anywhere from 8 to 18 teams. Now, if it's an 8-team league, it will end at the end after week 7. There will be one team left, and that will be the champion. And what some people are doing, they will redraft then. They will run 2 leagues inside of 1 season. You can have run a league. You could do that with up to 9 players. You could do an 8 run your guillotine league through week 8 and then through 9 through 16. And there you go.
Okay.
You've got you can have 2 winners in 1 year. You never get that in a regular fantasy league.
Guillotine a double chop.
I like kind of like, well, you can win twice.
Chop chop.
Now, Going back to back would be very impressive, right? Because you'll redraft after the first one is over.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go back to back in that, that'd be a pretty impressive feat.
Yeah.
Game of skill. So, yeah, you could do that. Let's talk about vacated targets, Brian. I asked you to come give me the teams that have the most vacated targets so we can try to identify some players who maybe haven't really performed at the level that we want, but because there's so many now, there's so many available receptions that we think there's room, there's a vacuum for these new players to come in.
Yeah, definitely. And we're going to start with Detroit, who has the most vacated targets.
It's everybody.
Maybe in
the history of the game.
And I'm not sure if they had prior knowledge of Jared Goff coming to town, so they all fleed.
Right, yeah.
But those guys are Kenny Golladay, mm-hmm. Marvin Jones, Danny Amendola, all on new teams. They accounted for 362 of the Lions' 562 pass attempts last year. They have all left town. That was also almost 73% of Detroit's air yards gone. So a lot of opportunity for some new faces in Detroit. I want to mention 50% of the targets from inside the 10-yard line for Detroit also gone.
Wow. That's now the question then is, all right, so other than T.J. Hockenson,
yes, we love Hockenson.
We love, and mm-hmm. we think he's sitting on a big year. Who are the players that could potentially fill that void? Now, earlier in the show, we made passing reference to the fact that Tyrell Williams appears to be the leading receiver there. Mm-hmm. We know what Breshad Perriman's all about, and that's, you know, the occasional deep bomb. So, you know, you watch when we're doing our take a chance of me receivers.
Sure.
We're going to be sprinkling in some Breshad Perriman from time to time, I think.
Yep.
And maybe a little Tyrell Williams. Some people think Amon-Ra St. Brown is going to be a number one receiver for that team before long. Scott Fish is one of them.
Amon-Ra St. Brown has the highest ADP among all the Detroit wide receivers right now at wide receiver 72. Tyrell Williams, who you said, as of late, looks like the number one wide receiver in camp. Again, Hockenson, we expect to be the leading just receiver overall. And then Breshad Perriman, who definitely showed flashes late with the Bucs in 2019, had a monster close
that?
To
yeah,
the season,
I
got him
too.
A big contract one year with the Jets.
Yep.
And he had some decent games for the Jets last year. So, like you said, I don't know who to recommend out of these guys. I would almost go with the cheapest one.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrell Williams has looked great at times, but there haven't been
not often.
Of those times because he's always hurt. But then again, he has left the Chargers, who are kind of cursed at wide receiver, it seems like, with injuries almost. I want to put more bad juju on them with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams already hurt. But I don't know. But like you said, it's really all about TJ Hockenson. But someone's going to have to step up at wide receiver. And I don't know if it's going to be rookie Amon-Ra St. Brown. And one other guy is Quintez Cephas, a long shot receiver. But we just have to see how this plays out. But again, nearly 63% of the targets vacated for Detroit. And a new quarterback in Jared Goff. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out.
All right. Give me the number two team with the most vacated targets.
The Tennessee Titans with nearly 34% of their targets vacated. Corey Davis gone. Adam Humphreys gone. And your boy, of course, Jonnu Smith gone. Those guys accounted for over 2,100 air yards from the Titans last year. That was nearly 57% of their air yards. And the guys who came in, at first it was just Josh Reynolds.
Right.
And we're like, okay, it's Anthony Firkser season, and Reynolds is something.
And A.J. Brown was my number one receiver at that moment.
We're like 200 targets for A.J. Brown in the bank. But of course, the Titans traded for Julio Jones, who comes in, who I do not hate, by the way, if you listen to last week's show. I hate his red zone usage or lack thereof throughout his career with the Falcons, but the Titans, with those players I mentioned, 485 targets gone, 15 vacated targets inside the 10-yard line. I'm just not excited about Josh Reynolds now that Julio Jones is in town.
No, that's the end of
it. It's really a matter of how much is Julio going to take from A.J. Brown's supposed leap into superstardom this year.
And I still love A.J. Brown. He's still like my number five wide receiver. But I think Julio Jones may actually make A.J. Brown more consistent than he might have been otherwise, because when he was all alone, I figured there were going to be some teams that would just, like, triple-team A.J. Brown.
They're going to sell out to stop A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry, and that's it.
That's it, right. And just somebody else is going to have
to beat us. Make Anthony Firkser beat us.
Right, Right.
Well, I can't wait to see if it was an Atlanta thing with the Julio red zone, end zone usage. Because, again, about 50% are up for grabs for Tennessee this year. And Julio has the size. He has the skill. Mm-hmm. So I hope they utilize him a lot more in the red zone.
What's the number three team with the most vacated targets?
The New Orleans Saints. Emmanuel Sanders and Jared Cook have left town. That opens up nearly 11 targets per game for the Saints.
And you're not even counting Michael Thomas.
Yeah,
in
I was about
that,
to get
right?
to that. Of course, any targets intended for Michael Thomas are essentially vacated for at least the first 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season. So a lot of opportunity in New Orleans. We're looking at guys, and they haven't brought in anybody yet. They're looking in-house.
Surprising.
Yeah. At Tre'Quan Smith, Marquez Callaway, Will Jordan Humphrey. Best name in the NFL, by the way. Will Jordan, love that. Some think Adam Trautman is a sleeper tight end. But again, right now, let's talk about Michael Thomas. Let's go back there. Wide receiver 44 right now in redraft. I mean, are you?
Wow.
Yeah, that's like round eight, round nine. Are you? Yeah. You're going to have to sit on him for a while, but
it all depends.
Could be all year.
It all depends on the size of your bench, and it could be all year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we don't even know. Are they even on speaking terms at that point?
Yeah. And the Saints might be bad this year. They might be really, really bad.
There is no. I feel like there is no team that is more safe to bet the under win total on. The win total on them is still 9.
Yeah.
That is the most safe under win total in the NFL.
I agree. Let's get negative. Make some money.
Yeah.
I saw Terrell Owens, and he was adamant about it. Says he can still play.
Of course,
47
he can.
Years old. Let's go, Saints. There's no better place for Terrell Owens to attempt a comeback than New Orleans. Well, right now, Marquez Callaway looks like the favorite to be the
top. Tre'Quan Smith will be.
I'm more on the Tre'Quan Smith, especially in best ball. He has those spike weeks, so I'm more on board with Tre'Quan Smith. But a lot of vacated targets in New Orleans. We'll see how those get spread around.
Okay.
And lastly, the Atlanta Falcons lost Julio, of course, and a fair amount of targets lost from Todd Gurley, Brian Hill, and Ito Smith, nearly 80 targets there. So after Jones was shipped to the Titans, 213 total vacated targets for Atlanta, nearly 1,200 air yards, more than a quarter of Atlanta's targets inside the 10, even though none of those went to Julio. Those were all really the running backs that I had mentioned. But this is all going back to Kyle Pitts. That's all that matters. The only player
that matters is
Kyle Pitts. Last year, Atlanta was fourth in pass attempts, fifth in passing yards. Mm-hmm. Earlier in the show, I mentioned the targets from inside the 10-yard line were guys like Russell Gage, Hayden Hurst, Laquon Treadwell were having success. Pitts is going to command those targets all over the place. Predict a minimum of 120 targets for Pitts. You can laugh now, Church. He's going to have a splash flat factor of a Randy Moss or a Megatron. He's that much of a freak athlete. So
I hope you're right.
Brian, in all of your leagues this year, in the flex position, what percentage will be tight ends this year? Because I feel like it's about 98% for you.
In, I mean, you know, 20, 30 so best balls.
Dan Arnold, your starter.
Yeah, Darren Waller,
and then you're somehow going to flex in a third tight end.
It'll be over two-thirds of my team. Arnold is the third tight end drafted, but we'll utilize him. But, no, I've got Waller and Pitts. I've been going second round Waller.
Sure.
Pitts in the third all day long.
Yeah.
Over 80%. Ownership percentage on those guys—it's insane. I'm all in, but
all right, let's get to our sleepers. Are you done? Are you done with this?
Is this sleeper going to be a tight end?
Just mention a couple lone players who left that might open up some opportunities on some teams. Will Fuller leaving Houston, so some people like Nico Collins in Houston
Last pick of the draft,
and Nelson Aguilar leaving Las Vegas. He saw a decent amount of targets, had 7-8 touchdowns. A lot of people excited about Brian Edwards for the Raiders this year, but Hunter Renfrow was supposedly flaming Jalen Ramsey in joint practice.
Jalen Ramsey did not agree with that assessment.
I'm sure he did.
Be interested to know. Yeah, so we'll leave that up to maybe a third party.
Jalen Ramsey might be falling off that Josh Norman cliff.
Remember when that happened?
It came quick.
It does come fast for cornerbacks. Let's get to our three sleepers of the week, beginning with Matt Harrison. Who is yours this week?
Terrace Marshall Jr.
The third.
6'3", 200 pounds, the biggest of the rookie wide receiver blue chippers. Played for offensive coordinator Joe Brady at LSU, the same school that produced Justin Jefferson last season. And by the way, Terrace Marshall did not drop a single pass in the red zone at LSU. has had some highlight reel catches in joint practices with the Colts and Ravens already, especially looking good with the high pointing and contested catches. He's also the only rookie wide receiver with two catches of 20-plus yards so far in the preseason, including a 59-yarder on his first drive. Robbie Anderson already dealing with a hamstring injury, and those are naggy. And Curtis Samuel's 97 vacated targets. That makes Terrace Marshall one of my favorite plays.
It was 1 year ago today when I unveiled Jonnu as my sleeper of the year. And for 5 weeks, I looked brilliant. He was 5 touchdowns in 5 weeks. He was the highest scoring tight end in many formats.
Jonnu he was a top 20 running back, I think.
And then it all came
he had like 2 rushing touchdowns.
Right. It all was brilliant for 5 weeks, and then he sprained his ankle, and they treated him like a blocking tight end for the rest of the year. Now, he goes to the Patriots, and for about 5 hours, Jonnu looked like he was going to go right back to the same level of love that I had for him.
Maybe even more.
Then they signed Hunter Henry, and people just basically wrote off Jonnu. His average draft position right now is round 14. That
Love
is
it.
Too low
Way too
for
low.
The best receiver on the team and the best athlete on the Patriots. Josh McDaniels is lining him up all over the field, including at running back, which I love.
Oh.
And I think I mentioned this in a previous show. Here's Bill Belichick 1 year before signing Jonnu Smith when they were meeting for a playoff game. And Belichick said this about Jonnu Smith then. He's probably the best in the league after the catch. Bill Belichick is going to use Jonnu big time.
Are you afraid of all your Damian Harris shares losing out to Jonnu?
As running back? I wouldn't mind if he gives up a couple of each game to Jonnu. He played not in the Thursday night game. He rested for the Thursday night game week before that. He had a crossing reception. And he broke 2 tackles on the play and looked fantastic. It's only one play, but I don't care. Jonnu, my sleeper of the week. Brian, who is yours?
I'm going a little deeper with Tyron Johnson, wide receiver for the Chargers. Right now, it looks like he'll win the third wide receiver job, but
maybe.
Mike Williams always hurt for L.A., it seems.
And underperforming.
Are they converting him to a tight end, though, Brian?
Not yet. No, they got Donald Parham at tight end. We already talked about him. But Tyron Johnson, undrafted free agent, has scored a touchdown on his first touch for every team he's played for since 12 years old. And that includes with the Chargers last year.
What?
His first catch.
Are you serious?
The first touch.
That's weird.
That's what the internet tells me. I did some fact checking on that. But Johnson.
And you got his peewee football stats.
Right.
Not a ton of opportunity last year. Only had 20 catches. But 400 yards and 3 touchdowns on those 20 catches. We played the extrapolation game. He gets the opportunity.
Gosh.
We're talking big time numbers here. A definite dynasty stash right now if you got spot on your roster and you want to keep an eye
on. If Mike Williams doesn't pan out, Tyron Johnson is sitting. He's sitting to take that spot either through injury or incompetence on Williams' part. That said, people love Williams right now, and he's getting drafted aggressively by people who just want a piece of that Chargers offense with Justin Herbert, which I can understand.
Whoa.
You know who's not being drafted aggressively, or maybe too aggressively for us, our taste? Saquon Barkley.
Yeah.
Give me the spot you take Saquon Barkley quickly.
In a guillotine league, not at all.
Okay.
And in a regular league, probably mid-second round.
Okay.
Darren Waller will be available in the second if Barkley's there. I'm taking Waller over Barkley, so I'm just not taking Barkley. Someone else is going to take him before I do.
Yeah, probably the third round for me in most leagues.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you missed any part of it, check out the podcast of Fantasy Football Weekly if you're listening to this over the air. Available on the iHeartRadio app and everywhere else that you love to get your podcasts. Talk to you in a week, everybody. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.